The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall bring to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start this morning off with, or this afternoon if you're listening to anything, with one of these items that's really kind of trivial, but it's always kind of fun to know. Here's why radio stations always start with a K or a W. You probably never noticed that until you do now. It seems that whenever you switch on the radio to your morning commute, all you hear is, "Time to wake up with K98.3. Our WBLS will be right back after this commercial break." If you listen closely, you'll notice that they all have something in common. The vast majority of radio stations start with the letter K or W. All radio stations have a four-letter identification code. The host of the show typically come up with a more catchy station name just in the four letters, but you can still hear it sprinkled in with their morning announcements and other advertisements. And the two letters that you consistently hear date all the way back to when people used to send telegrams. In 1912, several countries attended a conference to discuss international radio telegraphs. One of the things that came out of that meeting was the assignment or specific letters to identify each country's radio or television signal. The United States was given the letters W, K, N, and A. The letters N and A were given to the military stations, but K and W were assigned out for commercial use. Radio stations east of the Mississippi River had to start their stations with a W, and stations west of the Mississippi with a K. There is some discrepancy, though, since radio stations that already existed before this rule was put in place weren't required to change their name. The three letters after the K or W can mean a few different things. Sometimes it represents the network that owned a radio station, for example, WABC, KCBS, and WTBS. Sometimes it's the actual station number, like KTWO or KFOR. At other times, it's the acronym, such as WTTW for Windows to the World. But the station that takes home the prize for the best four-letter combination is a sports radio station out of St. Louis that chose the name KRAP, K-R-A-P. Now you know why radio stations do this. Now that we've had our dose of trivia, let's go ahead and start drama in real life in the Reader's Digest. We caught our stalker. For 5 years, he filled their days with dreads and their nights with fear. Then they fought back. Just before 8:45 a.m. on April 20, 2020, in the Los Angeles suburb of Westlake Village, and I'm waiting for our family's harasser to show up. Specifically, I'm hiding in the back of my mom's SUV, wearing a black hoodie and holding a walkie-talkie in one hand and a can of pepper spray in the other. The car is in the driveway of our two-story home, the second-to-last house at the top of a hill, just before a cul-de-sac. It's especially quiet up here tonight. No traffic, no pedestrians. I'm tense. Even though my parents are inside watching me on the security camera, it's been over an hour and he's due any time now. I practice taking slow, deep breaths. Then it happens. A man ascends our steep street. His eyes scan our home, darting from window to window. I silently plead with myself to stay calm as he passes within 10 feet of me, his gaze landing on the car's dark rear window. A split second passes before he beelines toward our mailbox and opens it. Slowly, shakily, I raise the walkie-talkie to my lips. "Carol Baskin," I say into the microphone. I repeat, "Carol Baskin is here." Carol Baskin, of course, is the infamous feline fanatic featured in Tiger King, the Netflix docuseries everyone in America seemed to be watching at the time. But to my family, Carol Baskin is the code name for the man who sows fear and inspires a revulsion, not unlike what the show's protagonist, Joe Exotic, feels for his arch nemesis. No large cats were harmed in the making of this story, but my family and I were haunted night after night. But tonight we're fighting back, focused on catching the man who has been harassing us and ending his perverse sign of terror once and for all. Unwanted notes and photos. It all began in 2015 when I was a 19-year-old sophomore at New York University. Back home, my sisters Brooke, 17, and Summer, 15, were in high school. That's when the first note appeared on the windshield of Brooke's white Jeep Wrangler, which was parked in our driveway. The typewritten note wasn't addressed to anyone in particular, and although we don't remember the exact message, it was short, and we distinctly recall the author's secret admirer writing style, with his childish tone and poor grammar. The letter was unsigned and unremarkable either. In an innocent gesture or a friendly prank, we figured, so we threw it out. A couple of weeks later, on February 12th, a second note appeared, under the Jeep's windshield wiper, again addressed to no one. It was cryptic. It was also creepy. Thanks for returning the picture. You don't have straight hair anyways. I guess you don't like red for Valentine's. It's all for fun, and I wonder if anyone has ever made you think what is next. The anticipation is the best part. Enjoy the Starbucks, and if you want future gifts to enjoy. Huh? What picture was the sender thanking us for supposedly returning? And what was the gibberish about not liking red for Valentine's Day or the bit about straight hair? And what Starbucks was one of us meant to enjoy? The note was unsettling enough that we hung on to it. 8 days later, note number 3 appeared on the Jeep. I know you like Starbucks. I got you something so you can enjoy your favorite drink or two. It's in the normal hiding spot. PTW, Happy Valentine's Day, SM. The references still eluded us, as did the whereabouts of the so-called normal hiding spot, although my family searched the perimeter of our house thoroughly. And who was SM? We acted our brains, scored our school directories, and Instagram followers for a suspect with those initials. Was SM an aliens? Regardless, we were now officially spooked. Summer was so petrified that she started sleeping with a kitchen knife. A month later, the stranger took things to a next level with another letter that was accompanied by a torn-out page from a porn magazine. This was no harmless secret admirer, but a sexually motivated harasser. A week after that, Brooke found a box of chocolates on the Jeep, and a fifth note was addressed to S, presumably for Summer. S, did you see my last note to you? The box behind the wall has something that reminds me of when we met. Interesting. SM. What box? What wall? Who is this freak? Twice that February, we found roses on our property. Sometime around March 25th, a neighbor told Summer that she'd left some babysitting money she owed her, along with one of Summer's sweatshirt in our mailbox. But when Summer checked, the mailbox was empty. Curious about the box behind the wall, my mom ventured over the wall in the cul-de-sac that separates the street from the grassy hiking trailhead. And sure enough, there was a box nestled beneath some branches. Inside, she found a shrine of sorts composed of stolen belongings and childish gifts. Summer's missing sweatshirt, the envelope of babysitting money, which had been emptied and ripped in half, a Starbucks gift card, a college postcard addressed to Summer that we'd thrown out, and a sticker of Summer's high school logo. My parents filed a report with our local police, but nothing came of it. We haven't received any explicit threats of violence, nor do we have any leads. One evening in late April, my highly protective father was doing a routine window check when he spotted a man walking a small black and white dog. The man opened our mailbox, peered inside with what looked like a laser light, then closed it. Dad darted outside to confront the stranger. Why were you just looking in my mailbox? The guy said something along the lines of, no, there was a dog barking. My dad challenged him, but the guy walked away. Dad ducked into the house, grabbed his keys, jumped into the car, and trailed him. He was a white guy in his late 40s, balding, medium height. He kept his eyes locked forward and walked briskly where my dad followed, hoping to see where he lived and take his picture. But when Dad realized he'd forgotten his cell phone, he impulsively made a U-turn and sped back home. When he returned moments later, the man was gone. Up to that point, we'd been convinced the culprit was an awkward teenager. Could this grown man be our creep? Did all the notes and gifts cease for about 5 months? In October 2015, we found note number 6. It was addressed to Summer and suggested that she work at a Hooters-inspired restaurant in town. To our dismay, our new motion-activated security cameras hadn't captured anything. A few weeks later, though, we had a stroke of luck. My parents were driving home in their Acura one evening when my dad recognized the man from the mailbox walking his dog. Dad got out of the car and followed him on foot. The man went inside a house less than a mile from ours. Once we had his address, it was easy to discover his identity. He was a husband and father who worked at a national bank, the one we banked at. In fact, he was involved with a variety of local charities and youth organizations. In other words, he was a prominent figure in the community. It also turned out they had a daughter who attended summer school, though the two had never spoken. But here's the portion of his resume that jumped out at us. He was affiliated with an organization dedicated to providing career and education opportunities for women and girls. Then the note stopped again, this time for 4 years. Maybe, we hoped, our family's harasser had retired, except he hadn't. New target, me. In fall 2019, we found note number 7 on the Acura's windshield. It included another cutout from a porn mag, only this time the note was addressed to me. It read in part, Tess, you are so darn cute, and love watching you drive that Jeep. You are so hot. See what you look like to me. Note number 8 came in March 2020 and was addressed to Summer. It came with more porn cutouts and again was signed SM. A few weeks later, I was looking out the window for the umpteenth time that night when I jumped. There he was by the mailbox, middle-aged, balding, walking a small black and white dog, along with another large black and white dog. I ducked under until he was out of sight, then sprinted outside. Wedged against the top of our mailbox was a guinea pig-sized rock that in no way could have materialized there naturally. It was the neighbor, and this time the security cameras caught him. Now we just needed the evidence that linked into the notes and the gifts. Which brings me back to the back seat of my mom's SUV, walkie-talkie to my mouth, confirming my parents that I've gotten a positive ID on the neighbor, known to my family as Carol Baskin. My parents and I optimized our operation. Every night at sundown, my mom or I would drive to a side street about halfway between the neighbor's house and ours, park out of sight, and wait for him to walk by with his dogs. We disguised ourselves with hats and sunglasses. We even borrowed my grandparents' cars so he wouldn't recognize ours. If we saw him en route, we'd radio my dad so he could set up the surveillance cameras, while the other person stationed at home snapped photos from the bedroom window as the neighbor opened our mailbox. On one occasion, we sent Summer a letter in the mail, figuring that the man was aching to find something related to her. As we anticipated, he opened our mailbox a day or two later, sorted through our mail, and snatched at the envelope addressed to her. Our first recorded encounter linking him directly and specifically to Summer, and maybe even to mail theft. On June 10th, the man took another letter for Summer out of our mailbox and placed it on the Jeep. Around this time, I started doing some research into how dangerous our situation might be. According to Psychology Today, our predatory stalker, which described ours, stalking is foreplay. The real goal is sexual assault, and these people are most likely to lead double lives. One study from the American Journal of Psychiatry says there is a troubled lack of warning of danger because they are the least intrusive stalkers and only glimpsed by their victims. This was our guy. Given our mounting evidence of what I'd read and what I read, we decided to talk with a friend of a friend, a retired law enforcement officer. As my parents began telling our story without naming names, she cut them off. I know who this is. And then she said the man's name. A couple in our neighborhood had told her that their niece had had an off-putting experience with him a few years back. She explained. I reached out to the couple to learn the details. The husband told me they'd rarely interacted with their neighbor, so it was odd when they learned that he had contacted their niece, a college student, and messaged her online. The neighbor told the young woman that he was good friends with her aunt, and that he wanted to get together to discuss investments. This struck everyone as weird, considering that he had never met the niece and he wasn't close to the couple. The law enforcement friend encouraged us to keep collecting evidence. Best case scenario, we actually caught him on camera leaving a note. 2 weeks later, we did. The ninth salacious note was addressed to Summer, and we got footage of the neighbor leaving the note. It was around this time that my dad revisited another key piece of evidence, the Starbucks card from the box. Back in 2015, my parents hadn't been able to verify who had purchased it, but now we had a name. My dad called the number on the back of the card and managed to confirm that it came from the neighbor's Starbucks account. The law fails us. We sent extensive documentation, including comprehensive timeline and 59 surveillance videos, to the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. An officer told us that our work was the most impressive presentation he'd ever seen from a victim. They even bagged some of the letters and magazine cutouts to test for DNA. In the meantime, we got a temporary restraining order, the first step toward getting a permanent one. In early August, a week before the hearing for the permanent restraining order, we received devastating news. The district attorney's office had declined to press felony stalking charges or any other charges. The prosecutor explained that we had insufficient evidence to prove that the neighbor's actions satisfied all the requirements necessary to warrant a stalking charge. Even though he showed up at our house multiple times, he hadn't followed us outside of our home, as far as we knew. He hadn't made any explicit violent threats toward us. And while there is a case law for misdemeanor stalking charges without an overt threat, we'd passed the year-long statute of limitations for all the events that occurred in 2015. The prosecutor said that she considered other smaller charges, such as trespassing, but the neighbor had never climbed over a fence or a gate. Our only hope was getting a judge to grant the long-term restraining order, and even that seemed iffy. But prior to hearing, the neighbor's lawyer and our lawyer struck a deal. The civil harassment restraining order would last for 2 years, and the neighbor would not contest the accusations or evidence that we had included in our petition for the restraining order. We insisted that he attend weekly therapy sessions as well. We can now move forward with some semblance of peace and security. Is it over? In fall 2020, my family was contacted by a local newspaper reporter who'd gotten a tip about our ordeal. I agreed to an interview, and my parents gave written statements. When the story came out, social media lit up. Some sleuths at the newspaper tweeted that they might have solved the mystery of the neighbor's SM moniker. They'd found a social media account of his that we'd somehow missed. There he was, clear as day, grinning wildly in his profile and picture, and his handle included the phrase, Sexy Mexi. The neighbor relinquished his various board seats, his firm's website was taken down, and he sold his house. But after the police had questioned the neighbor, and after the hearing when we had a restraining order against him, I saw something disturbing play out on Nextdoor, a social network for neighbors. A young woman in her neighborhood posted about a bobcat sighting. Looking at her profile picture, I thought she looked like Summer. Blonde, petite, pretty. And there in the comments was the neighbor, so seemingly concerned about the bobcat's whereabouts, soon deterred by the police investigation into his behavior or the act of restraining order against him, that he apparently just couldn't help asking the young woman a burning question. What street do you live on? Apples to Amazon. The average U.S. household is worth $118,200. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos is worth about $172 billion. That's like comparing the size of a white blood cell to the size of a finback whale, the height of a piece of Toblerone chocolate to the height of five Mount Everests, the length of a single adult stride into the distance from the New York to Kentucky, the volume of a quiet library to the roar of a private jet taking off. One man's trash is Damon Carson's treasure. National interest. The reuse king. And there's a picture of a gentleman, looks like he's probably in his mid-40s, maybe early 50s, pushing a large metal wheel of some sort. The reuse king. If you happen to be sitting on 8,000 lengths of blue rope or a few dozen 26-foot guardrails, this guy wants to talk. Damon Carson has one of the more interesting inboxes in America. On any given day, from his office in Denver, Colorado, he will field myriad inquiries from people looking to unload stuff. We're not talking about the odd homeowner trying to dispense with an old refrigerator or a bag full of out-of-fashioned clothing. Picture instead large companies looking to unload massive amounts of stuff that otherwise would be on a fast track to the landfill. For example, Carson 50, called that one, didn't I, got a request to pick up a surplus rolls of the fabric used to cover dome sports stadiums. A battery manufacturer had 22 tons of barium sulfate used in lead-acid batteries. The iron content was too high for the manufacturer's spec, but maybe he could find a new home for it. 28 pallets loads of plastic bins from a discount retailer were just waiting for him to repurpose them. And a recreation company wanted to know if Carson was interested in 800 pounds of blue ropes, each 33 and a half inches long, which the manufacturer no longer needed to make the handles on coolers. They're kind of a tree-hugging company, he explained. They don't want to just throw it away, nor should they, because it has value. The question of what value and to whom is the algebra that animates Carson's days. Call him, as he calls himself, a waste speculator or a materials gambler. A yidda of the complex, never-ending waste stream of contemporary capitalism, trying not to pair people with people, but things with people. I'm just betting somewhere that in America, I can find a home for 8,033.5 inches pieces of rope, Carson says. For nearly a decade, his company Repurposed Materials has been casting these wagers. He's not looking to recycle the stuff he gets, bringing it down to make something new, but rather finding new homes for cast-off goods in their original form. American industrial facilities create and discard approximately 7.6 billion tons of unwanted industrial materials annually. For the moment, Carson's unique business, which finds new lives for millions of pounds of refuse every year, is the only thing standing between those pallets of plastic bins and the landfill. In the late 1990s, Carson was on break from business school and leading the life of a ski bum in Vail, Colorado, when he discovered the lucrative world of waste. The construction scene was booming, and he wanted in. Cashing in on his entrepreneurial skills, he and a friend bought a portable toilet business that catered to construction sites. After tripling the company's business in 4 years, he sold it and bought laundromats and invested in trailer parks. I kind of like the ugly in business, you know, The non-sexy, he says. Working even peripherally in construction, Carson had become familiar with an almost everyday phenomenon. You'd open up one of these big construction dumpsters and stuff would just start falling out, he says. He would find perfectly straight 2x4s or a window still clad in plastic from the factory. You can't wrap your mind around how wasteful America is until you run a waste company, he says. Carson, a husband and father of 3 adult children, is far from wasteful. Frugal is how he describes himself. The clean shirt and boots I'm wearing all came from Goodwill, he says. My Ford truck, I bought it 2 years ago with 180,000 miles on it. With his penchant for thrift and his exposure to excessive waste, he began thinking about creating a sort of second-hand Home Depot that would sell surplus materials and keep them out of the waste stream. But his plans never came to fruition. Then in 2010, an artist friend told him something that reignited his idea. They use vinyl ads attached to outdoor billboards that make great drop cloths for painting. Intrigued, Carson called a Denver outdoor ad company. A few minutes and $140 later, he was the owner of 20 used billboard vinyls. I had zero business plan, he says. He started listening to vinyls on Craigslist. The first buyers were farmers looking for tarps to cover their hay bales, and a business was born. There is a solid environmental case for repurposing or upcycling. When people call, I say we don't chip, shred, grind, melt, Carson notes. Recycling, however noble, still takes energy. One estimate found it takes slightly less than half the BTUs of energy to manufacture something from recycled steel materials than to make it new. Why grind something up? Why melt something down if it still has value, he asked. An old oil-filled pipe might be melted down and turned into a car bumper, but it still takes a fair amount of power to finish the transformation. Why not leave it as a steel pipe? Why not tilt it vertically and turn it into a fence post for a livestock pasture? Now you're down just the cost of transport. Carson's business selling used billboard vinyls was humming along for a few months when someone he met uttered those three magic words, rubber conveyor belts. The belts were worn out from transporting ore and other materials for the mining industry, but Carson suspected they still had a use. He made some calls and for a few $100 bought a healthy supply of belts. For their second act, the belts were sold to ranchers on the cold northern plains to be used as windbreaks for cattle. As repurposed material grew, its websites turned into sort of a national swap meet, where thrift-minded purchasing managers, farmers, and everyday consumers puzzle over what to do with the unusual items that end up there. It's often Carson's buyers who come up with their own creative uses. When a police department in Florida called in to order roughly 400 square feet of old conveyor belts, Carson says he learned that ballistic curtains in the shooting world are 1/8 of an inch thick and go for about $3 a square foot. His conveyor belts were 1/2 inch thick and $1 a square foot. They told me your used stuff works better than the purpose belt, and it's 1/3 the price, he says. On a late September afternoon, Carson strolls around his Colorado warehouse, one of 6 the company now maintains nationally. He passes massive spools of steel cable that formerly serviced ski lifts. Some had been brought by the Bureau of Land Management to help demarcate campgrounds. Nearby was a cluster of 12-inch-high, 26-foot-long highway guardrails. This gets used as retaining wall or fencing. In another area was a 2.5-thick marine rope meant to tie ships to docks, all ready for a big tug-of-war game. Repurposing is at heart about redefinition, and so mineral oil, destined for use in the artificial insemination industry and exposed to too much heat during transport, can find a second life as a dust suppressant for dirt roads. The sturdy bristles from broken-down street sweepers find their way into fields where they serve as back scratchers for livestock. It's no small wonder that many of Carson's clients have some link to farming or ranching. Cowboy engineers, he calls them. The ethos of repurposing has never gone away from farming, he says. These people are used to solving problems in their own. A cowboy in North Dakota goes, my tractor's stuck in the mud, and that's really a thick rope. I bet it'll pull my tractor. And I don't need a structural engineer to tell me the rope is strong enough to pull my tractor out. Maybe the cowboy ethos is catching. Carson recently opened 2 new warehouses. Corporate America, he says, has become increasingly focused on landfill diversion and sustainability. So we're upping our capabilities. You never know when the next 44,000-pound spool of 4-inch-thick marine rope might come along or where it might go. And there's a picture here of a couple of the things he does. Most products can be used for a purpose it wasn't designed for, says Carson. It's all marketing. So old fire hoses, and there's a picture of a roll, several rolls of fire hoses, have found a use as bumpers for boat docks. While Carson is banking, someone will figure out a need for these old massive spools that they put things on, the ones that are like 6 or 8 feet high and things. He's got pictures of those. That's cool. Dust to dust. Washington was the first state to legalize human composting. Remains are placed in a container with wood chips, alfalfa, and straw. The oxygen and microbes go to work. Within a month, you should have about 2 wheelbarrows worth of soil. What else would you expect from the evergreen state? How to 12 tips for more sustainable living. Doing right by the planet is easier than you think and might help your wallet as well. Lock in warmth. Surprising items. Think old rags, trimmings from hair salons can be recycled into home insulation. Oftentimes, doing things in a more sustainable way means doing them the old-fashioned way. Buying bar soap instead of bottles of body wash, for example. Hanging clothes on a line versus running the dryer. Making small tweaks through our routines can pay off big in various ways. Helping the planet while saving you time, money, or both. With that in mind, we've compiled 12 easy steps that will help you go to the most distance. We hope you'll be surprised by how big a difference you can make with relatively little effort. Number 1. Up your recycling game. Even if you're good about toting your newspapers and cat food cans to the curb each week, you're probably tossing other items that could and should go into these blue bins. Think foil, bubble wrap, wire hangers. When recycled, all can turn into things you might not expect, including car bumpers, carpeting, comic books, egg cartons, nails, and trash bags, according to the EPA. Other items, such as dead batteries, spent light bulbs, empty ink cartridges, and used motor oil, should be taken to dedicated collection centers, often the stores where you bought them, for recycling. If that seems like a hassle, consider the alternative. These would otherwise spend centuries in landfills. Plastic can take up to 450 years to decompose, aluminum 200 years, and glass 1 million years. That's good for archaeologists, of course. Number 2, don't crush your cans. First off, when you're on the go, drinks and cans are the way to go. Recycling aluminum is much more efficient than recycling plastic, about 85% of which ends up in landfills anyway. Using less than 5% of the energy it takes to manufacture the original product versus 67% for plastic, glass bottles are also a far greener choice than plastic, since like aluminum, glass can always be melted down and made into something new. But don't crush your cans. Nearly a fourth of the cans that land in recycling centers don't get recycled properly, sometimes because they're crushed so thin they wind up with the paper products. Squeeze a stress ball instead. Number 3, caps off, or depending on where you live. Another reason plastic bottles are problematic, they're caps, which are recyclable in some places but not in others. In either case, doing the wrong thing can undermine your local recycling effort. Check with the local public works or Department of Sanitation to find out which way to go in your area. And if you discover you can't recycle the caps, visit earth911.com to find nearby locations where you can. While you're at it, bookmark the website. It's a helpful resource for the 411 on just about anything recycling related. Number 4. Quit tossing certain items. Your old wine corks and coffee grounds, along with used Q-tips with paper sticks, not plastic, and used tea leaves can be composted instead of thrown in the trash. If you don't have access to a community compost or don't want to keep composting pile at your home, you can hire a company to regularly come pick up your food scraps for a fee. That is if your city doesn't already offer compost collection services. Never heard of those, sorry. 5. Embrace the ugly. Farmers deem about a third of all the produce they grow out to be too ugly to sell. But fruits and vegetables that are bruised, odd-looking, or otherwise imperfect are perfectly good to use. It's easier to hide them in soups and smoothies, for instance. Don't shy away from these foods at the store, or do sign up to have them delivered straight to your door through services such as Misfit Markets, Imperfect Foods, and Hungry Harvest, which offer oddball produce at discounted prices. To further reduce food waste, donate any surplus non-perishables to local food banks and support grocery stores, restaurants, and other companies that do the same, including Darden Restaurants, which owns Olive Garden, Longhorn Steakhouse, and other chains, Giant Food Stores, Martin's Food Markets, Target, Kellogg's, and Panera Bread. Number 6. Do not disturb. You probably know to reuse your towels, but you can make your hotel stays more sustainable by skipping daily housekeeping. Each service you go without saves water and electricity and cuts down on the use of chemicals. Hotels reduced their frequency of housekeeping during the early days of the pandemic, and many, including most Hilton and Marriott properties, have kept up the practice. Even at Disney World, housekeeping comes every other day. Of course, if you need more frequent service, all you have to do is ask for it. Number 7, run the dishwasher. Go ahead, let the appliance do all the work. Running a full dishwasher uses an average of 60% less energy than hand washing. Newer machines also use far less water, saving you money on both bills. If you don't have a dishwasher, fill the sink with suds once instead of running the tap the whole time. That way you use about a fifth of the water. Keep cool and warm, number 8. Heat rises, and you can take advantage of this by reversing the motor on your ceiling fan and running on low in the clockwise direction during colder climates, during colder months. This will produce an updraft, forcing warm air near the fan down into your living space. No thermostat adjustments are needed. When the weather turns warm, try setting your thermostats to 78 degrees. You may still feel unreasonably comfortable, all the while reducing your electrical usage. If your heat and air conditioning come through air vents, don't close them thinking you'll save energy. Closing off vents only forces your system to work harder, which ultimately consumes more energy. Number 9. Do something different with your hair. Barbershops and salons in North America produce a lot of waste, 877 pounds per minute to be exact. Some of that includes hair trimmings, which have a surprising variety of uses, among them soaking up oil spills and recycling insulation. See if your salon is one of the 4,500 members of the Green Circle Salons, which reclaims and repurposes 1 million pounds of beauty waste every year. Number 10. Measure yourself. It may seem smart to order multiple sizes when shopping for clothes online, planning to return those that don't fit. But the unfortunate reality is that many returned articles, even unopened ones, are discarded, not resold. So take your measurements and rely on size charts and customer reviews instead. Forget fast fashion. Number 11. By that, we basically mean cheap, trendy clothing you'll find at stores that get new inventory every month. Most of the clothing created by these brands ultimately ends up in landfills. The average American throws away 82 pounds of it each year. Thankfully, there's a growing club of companies that prioritize sustainability, producing fewer but longer-lasting articles, often made with organic fabrics and or eco-friendly dyes. A short list: Eileen Fisher, Everglain, and Patagonia. When clothing is truly at its end, consider reusing it as cleaning rags. You can also take textile waste to a local drop-off or order a take-back bag from the company for days. That's the name of the company, for days, which will do that for you. Number 12, don't get duped. Because the consumer trend towards more eco-friendly products, many companies make exaggerated or downright deceitful claims about their own efforts. For instance, a brand might tout that its products are free of a certain chemical, even though that chemical has been banned for decades. This is called greenwashing. Avoid falling for it by looking for certifications such as Fair Trade Certified or Rainforest Alliance Certified. If a brand took the time to be evaluated by a third party, it's likely sincere about sustainability. SparkNotes spoiler. They just got engaged, but there are 200 pages left, so it's not looking good. My daughter on Jane Eyre. And with that, let's roll over to Consumer Reports. And let's finish up the letters, which we started last week. This is the final one. This is Ask Our Experts. I keep getting voicemails telling me my car warrant is expiring. What should I do? These voicemails are almost always a scam. In fact, the kind of auto warranty robocalls you're receiving, where you're told that your warranty or insurance policy is about to expire, have been consumers' most frequently filed complaint to the Federal Communications Commission for the past 2 years. What do the scammers want from you? They're hoping you'll reveal personal information such as your driver's license or Social Security number, which they can then use. They may also be hoping to sell you a third-party service contract you don't need that could cost thousands of dollars. What makes it hard to be sure these calls are from scammers is that they may have real information about you, such as your car's make and model. Our advice? Never interact with callers pitching extended warranty products. If you decide you'd like an extended warranty, contact your car dealer directly and see what options the dealership may offer. That's interesting. I keep getting these cards from about a car that I owned 6 years ago. Ridiculous. See our insights. Kitchen money savers. Making just a few of these simple updates in your kitchen could save you $100 or more this year. Save with a label maker. Phenomeno D30 label maker for $33. By labeling and dating leftovers and pantry staples, you'll find items faster and waste less food, something that costs the average U.S. household $1,866 per year, according to a 2020 study. In our trial of five handheld label makers, the Fomemo was a breeze to use. Cultivate a countertop garden. Aerial Garden Harvest 360 for $130. Growing your own greens means not throwing away wilted store-bought ones that you couldn't eat fast enough. And with a hydroponic planter like this one, which uses LED lights to mimic the sun, you'll have fresh lettuce year-round. Potential savings, $62 in the first year, if you spend just $4 less per week on groceries. But it's $130 for this Aero Garden Harvest. Swap store-bought seltzer for on-demand fizzy water. SodaStream Terra for $99. If you buy this SodaStream among the most convenient models that we've tested and make 1 liter a day rather than buying seltzer at 86 cents per liter, you'll save $138 in the first year and save 365 plastic bottles. Micro-reusable paper towels. Cut back on your paper towels. $20 for a 10-pack. It's easy to use paper towels for every minor task, but it's a pricey habit. You may be paying as much as $3 more per roll. Recoup some of that money swapping these reusable towels made of biodegradable cotton. If you currently use 2 paper rolls a month, you'll save around $72 in just the first year. How to keep your bike safe. See our tested bicycle locks to see which ones were the most likely to thwart thieves. In our test, we found that heavier locks are better for security because they take longer to break open or cut through. But of course, the heavier the lock, the less easy it is to carry. For urban users, especially those who leave their bikes unattended for more than a few minutes, a heavy U-lock, like the Kryptonite, which we'll look at in a second, may be your best bet. It was most difficult to break open with crowbars, electric grinders, and hacksaws, all of which we used in our test. But if you're just leaving your bike for a minute or two while on a recreational ride, a lighter, less secure lock may be a sufficient deterrent. Regardless of which lock you choose, always secure your bike in a well-lit area to a solid object that can't be lifted or easily cut through. Experts suggest locking your bike frame first, then if you have an expandable chain or lock, include the back wheel with the frame because it's the pricier of the two wheels to replace. And they list four of them, the Kryptonite New York Forget About It Mini U-Lock for $154. It weighs 4 pounds and 8 ounces. The Abus Granite X Plus 540 U-Lock, $122. It weighs 3 pounds. The LifeLock Core Plus at $170 weighs 4 pounds 15 ounces, and it's $170. And the CD Lock Folding Compact Folding Bike Lock for $85 weighs 2 pounds. Time travel. Candy. 1928. The phrase trick-or-treat first appears in a Michigan newspaper that describes kids threatening to soap up people's windows on Halloween if they weren't given treats. In 1939, candy bar wrappers don't have calorie counts, so CR tests some and finds that one Hershey bar has 1,150 calories. In 1943, CR tests 20 candy bars and finds that 19 were smaller than those found in 1939, meaning shoppers spent 23% more for their favorites. Only the Tootsie Roll retained its 1939 size. 1954, M&M introduces peanut M&M's, a hot new twist on its popular candy. In 2021, M&M's are the most popular kids' Halloween candy. 1963, CR reports on an insect infestation in the candy industry, when the FDA seizes 500,000 bags of cocoa beans believed to contain bugs. In 1973, we warned that Orbits with Blower, a packet of candy pellets with a straw to shoot them at others, may be dangerous to children. In 1982, to uncover the candy with the most chocolate, CR tests Three Musketeers at Hershey's bars. The Three Musketeer looks bigger because it's filled with nougat, but the Hershey bar contains more chocolate. That's kind of obvious, actually. 1996, our tester states a dozen chocolate brands coating, costing from $5.75 to $48 a pound. Teuscher, the most expensive, is also judged one of the best-tasting nut candies. It's a whole, sweet, crunchy hazelnut coated with dark chocolate. 2019, we compare three dark chocolate peanut butter cups, Theo, Justin's, and Reese's, and find that Theo cups are much lower in sodium and sugar than the other two. I don't know how they taste, though. That's interesting. No taste quality there. 2022, 80% of Americans say they plan to go trick-or-treating this year. Below is a visual guide to how much candy corn you can eat for 100 calories. And it looks like there's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16 and a half pieces of candy corn for 100 calories. The best small trucks. Big pickup trucks like the F-150 and Chevrolet Silverado 1500 have been the top-selling trucks in the U.S. for decades. The smaller SUVs-based trucklets like the Ford Maverick and the Honda Ridgeline are gaining in popularity. The Maverick and the Ridgeline are both good choices, but they offer different driving experiences. The base Maverick, for example, is a hybrid with impressive miles per gallon and range, so it costs much less to fuel up than a Ridgeline. The Chrysler Ridgeline offers more refinement, power, and towing capacity. With our reviews and rating, see whether any of these trucks recommended with CR is right for you. The Honda Ridgeline goes from $38,000 to $46,000. The Ford Maverick goes from $21,000 to $27,000. Destination charges are about the same. Overall, 20 miles per gallon for the Ridgeline in the city is 13 miles on the highway is 29 for the Ridgeline. For the Maverick, it's 33 in the city and 39 on the highway, so it's a lot better. They both got good road test scores. The reliability is very good for the Honda, but questionable for the Ford. Predicted owner satisfaction, high for the Honda, okay for the Ford. 0 to 60 acceleration, 7.3 seconds for the Honda, 8.3 seconds for the Ford. Towing capacity for the Honda is a lot more. It's 5,000 pounds, and for the Ford, it's 2,000 pounds. The driving range for the Honda, however, is only 380 miles, while the Ford is 505 miles. An annual fuel cost for the Honda is $2,700. For the Ford, it's $1,500. So the Ridgeline has an inviting interior, all-wheel drive, and a smooth 280-horsepower 3.5-liter V6 engine with a 5'4" bed and an innovative dual-action tailgate that folds both down and to the side for access to a lockable underfloor storage area. But the Ridgeline's higher price and not as great fuel economy make thrifty drivers lean toward the Maverick. The Maverick, while not exactly comfy, is a civilized ride and outscores every pickup in its class except the Ridgeline. The truck has a 4.6-inch bed and a standard hybrid powertrain, good for 37 miles per gallon overall, better than any other truck and most cars and SUVs. That makes the Maverick's all-around smart pick. One caveat, this hybrid comes only in front-wheel drive. Now here's an interesting piece, and I didn't understand some of this. Six vegetables that are healthier when cooked. You might be surprised to learn that some vegetables can be more nutritious when cooked rather than raw. That's because cooking increases the content of some nutrients and helps your body use others more easily. Here's how to unleash the nutritional potential of common veggies and boost their flavor too. Carrots. A 2008 study in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry found that boiling carrots until tender boosted the concentration of cancer-fighting carotenoids by 14%. Boil the carrots whole before slicing, which helps keep the nutrients from escaping into the cooking water. Spinach. You'll absorb more calcium and iron from these leafy greens if you eat them cooked. The reason? Spinach has oxalic acid, which blocks the absorption of the minerals, but high temperatures break down the acid. One study found that boiling spinach, then plunging it into cold water, reduced oxalate content by 40%. Blanch fresh spinach leaves in boiling water for 2 minutes, then plunge them in ice water for a few more and drain. Mushrooms. Cooking concentrates the nutrients in mushrooms, so a cup of cooked white ones are about twice as much muscle-building potassium, heart-healthy niacin, and immune-boosting zinc as a cup of raw ones. Cooking tip. Mushrooms readily soak up fat, so go easy on the oil to keep calories in check. For a flavor boost, saute with garlic and sprigs of fresh thyme. Red bell peppers. They are rich in vitamin C, plus they're a great source of carotenoids, the antioxidants that aid eye health, which are better absorbed when cooked. Lightly roast or stir-fry bell peppers to maximize their vitamin C, which can escape in boiling water. Cooking them for 5 minutes generally gets you the most nutritional benefits. Tomatoes. Whether tomatoes are baked, fried, or pureed, heat increases the phytochemical lysopine, which has been linked to lower rates of cancer and heart disease. One landmark study found that heating tomatoes for 30 minutes at 190.4 degrees Fahrenheit, boosted the absorbable lysopene by 35%. Cooking tip. Roasting tomatoes in an oven or air fryer concentrates their flavor. Put quartered tomatoes on a sheet pan, drizzle with olive oil and balsamic vinegar, sprinkle with garlic, salt, and pepper, then roast them for half an hour at 200 degrees Fahrenheit. Asparagus. The study of the International Journal of Food Science and Technology found that cooking these stalks raised the level of five disease-fighting antioxidants by 23 to 98%. Another study found that cooking asparagus for more than double the levels of two types of phenolic acid, which some studies have linked to lower cancer rates. To keep the spears crisp and help them retain nutrients, dunk them whole into boiling water. Remove when bright green. Toss with lemon juice and olive oil. The oil helps to absorb the antioxidants. And the top veggie cooking tools. Easy way to roast veggies on your countertop is a Chefman Turbo Fry Air Fryer, 4.5 quart for $100. Great for boiling in soups. Merton & Stock German Enameled Iron 1873 Pot, $170. Top pick for steaming and sautéing, De'Longhi Levisin All-in-One Programmable CKM1641T, $160. Looks like a crock pot. Nice pan for stir-frying. Made in cookware, stainless steel for $90. That's interesting. Product update. The latest ratings from our labs. Painting made easier. If you're looking to save some cash and do it yourself, there's good news. Refreshing your rooms is a much less fraught process with innovative paints, tools, and strategies. The pandemic years haven't been hard just on us. Our homes have seen some serious wear and tear since we spent so much time in them. A fresh coat of paint could be an instant room reviver, but the cost of hiring a professional, which has only increased with inflation, may make you hesitate. Painters are typically charging $20 to $50 per hour, or an average about $330 per square foot, says Bailey Carson, a home care expert at Angie, the home services website. So an average 340 square foot living room might cost $1,000 or more to paint. But if you brandish your own roller, you could do the same job, including buying some new equipment like rollers and a ladder, for as little as $150. Being the holder of the roller may not sound so appealing to you, though. After all, painting can be hard work. But there are new and improved paints and innovative tools that help make this kind of project less daunting. Most of today's paints don't require a primer, and they provide quality coverage in a single coat. They're also safer for you to work with lower amounts of VOCs, which are volatile organic compounds, the stuff you really don't want to breathe in while painting and as the paint dries. Which is also, what's also easier is choosing the right colors. Some companies will now send a large color sample directly to your door, so you can get a real feel for how the color will look on your walls. And once you've decided, the right tools can help you minimize mess and finish the job faster. If you're game, what follows is a do-it-yourself practical painting guide packed with advice from experts that will help take you in the least stressful way possible from choosing your paint finish, colors, and tools to enjoying your freshly painted room. And there's four common paint finishes. There's matte flat. This non-reflective finish is best for living rooms, kid-free bedrooms, and ceilings because while it hides dings and flows well, it's not particularly resistant to scuffs and stains. Eggshell, a low-luster finish with a hint of sheen. This is a nice choice for living rooms, bedrooms, and libraries or TV rooms. It's a bit more resistant to scuff than a matte finish. Satin, this has a shinier finish than eggshell and is great for high-traffic areas like hallways, dining rooms, kitchens, and bathrooms because it's tougher to scruff up and stain. For those last two rooms, look for mold and mildew-resistant claims, which means the paint should withstand high moisture. And semi-gloss, the most lustrous finish, it stains best and is easiest to clean. Use it on all trims, such as around doors. Finding your color. We've all had those moments at the paint store when we're overwhelmed by the endless strips of papers with graduations of blues, greens, yellows, and whites. How to decide what will look right on your walls? Forget those strips and start your search online to narrow the field. Major paint brands like PPG and Glidden offer online visualizers that allow you to upload a photo of your room, then apply different colors digitally to get a sense of what will look best. Once you've winnowed the field to a few of your top contenders, you'll want some real-world samples. Instead of taping small paint chips to a wall or buying sample-sized cans of paint patches of color, try a more convenient alternative. Friends like Benjamin Moore, Claire, and Sherman Williams now offer large peel-and-stick paint squares ranging from about 8.8 inches to 9 by 14 inches that you can easily move around to see how a color will reflect light on a different wall. No matter which method you choose, place the colors at eye level and leave them up for at least a couple of days. Also consider accent walls and colored trims. If you're painting all four walls white, for example, Nicole Gibbons, an interior designer and founder and CEO of Claire Paint, suggests an unexpected color on the ceiling, like a cobalt blue, or an accent wall in a deep green, or simply paint a trim a different color. It's a small but easy way to transform a room's mood and create visual interest. How many cans will you need? Most brands offer paint by the gallon, which can cover 350 to 400 square feet of walls. That means painting all of the walls and a ceiling of a small bedroom will typically require one can of paint. A living room with high ceilings will probably need 2 gallons. To estimate your room's paint needs, measure the length, width, and height, and plug those numbers into a free online paint calculation tool. Nearly every major brand offers one, to see how many cans it suggests. If you need several cans, see if the brand offers a 5-gallon bucket, often at a discount. Keep in mind that you'll probably use a different finish of paint for the trim around windows and doors, so it's best to calculate the amount needed for those separately. Most of the calculator tools let you specify the number of doors and windows. Typically, a 1-quart size bucket should be enough for all the trim in a standard 10 by 10 foot room. The same is true of smaller projects, such as painting a single accent wall or just a ceiling with 1 coat of paint. Picking your paint brand. There are 3 main things CR testers look at when rating a paint. 1, that it spreads smoothly on the walls from the first brush stroke to the last. 2, whether the paint hides the old color on your wall, even if it has a dark shade in just 1 coat. And 3, whether it resists fading over time and stands up to general cleaning, such as wiping away stains, particularly important in a bathroom or kitchen. A weaker paint will constantly need to be retouched later on, says Richard Handel, who oversees CR's paint ratings. A great durable paint, on the other hand, should last at least 5 to 7 years. In our test to assess quality and longevity, we determine how effective a paint is at hiding by applying a single coat over black paint, then evaluating how well it covered it up. Then to find out if a paint resists tough oil and water-based stains, our testers stain a dried swath of paint with coffee and a soot-like substance. Once it is dried, we try to wash the stain off. Then we use a color meter to measure how close the color of the clean paint is to the original coat. The closer it is, the higher the score in our stain resistance test. This also indicates how the paint will hold up over time. And we're going to look at some of those ratings in a few minutes. But first of all, let's look at do-it-yourself toolkits. 1, drop cloths. Keep furniture cloths protected from paint with reasonable cloths. The pro pick is HDS plastic drop cloths for $3. Roller tray. This large tray has a magnetic brush holder to prevent handles from getting messy, and it easily washes clean. The handy paint tray for $12. Step tool. The stool above is over 3 feet high and has a trough to store tools and hook for paint can. The ProPEC Rubbermate lightweight aluminum step stool with project top is $55. Painter's tape. For clean lines, apply painter's tape to baseboards, trim, and where the ceiling meets the walls before painting. Remove and paint is dry or roughly an hour after the final layer of paint goes on. Scotch Blue Sharp Lines Multi-Service Printer's Tape is $6. Metal Putty Knife. Use this to apply spackling compound in cracks and nail holes before painting. And DeWalt 3-inch putty knife for $14. Well, that's an expensive one. Fast-driving spackling compound. This product is pre-mixed and lets you know when it's dry by changing color. Use it to fill all holes and cracks. DAP Dry Dex Dry Time Indicator Spackling for $9. Paint roller. Fabric rollers made of microfiber hold more paint than foam rollers. That means you don't have to load your roller as often, and you'll achieve a much smoother, cleaner finish. The ProPick is the Worcester Pro Microfiber High Density Roller Cover at $11. Extension pole. Beloved by experts, this handy tool allows you to paint faster with less effort because it eliminates bending down every time you need to load your roller. The ProPick is Mr. Long Arm 3204 Pro Pole Extension Pole for $21. Paint brushes. A quality brush is the key to a nice-looking paint job. Use them for greater precision around trim and detail work. And the ProPick is the Purdy 1408 XL brush 3-pack at $22. And you need a standing sponge, your go-to for getting walls smooth. This sponge reduces dust while sanding. Alacrity expanding fudge, 4-pack is $7. There are a few more things, and we'll hit those next week. We don't have enough time to go over them for now. So road report, let's do a couple of these. Check your spare tire. Remember to periodically inspect your spare tire to make sure that it's properly inflated and that the rubber hasn't deteriorated. Also, check the wheel for corrosion. This is especially important if your spare is mounted under the rear or under your vehicle and exposed to the elements. If the spare is hard to access, ask your mechanic to check at each tire rotation. Regardless of condition, unused spare tires should be replaced at least every 10 years. Apple's version of CarPlay, coming with the iOS 16 system update this fall, will radically change dashboards and compatible new cars. Pleasantly, CarPlay can interact with phone navigation and music apps and displays them on the car's infotainment screen. The new version will extend the integration to the instrument panel, allowing customization for speed, RPM, mileage, and more. Partners include Ford, Honda, and Nissan. The vital statistics, 3 years, the amount of time it will take you to break even on the extra cost of buying a hybrid version over a similar conventional model of car, due to how much you'll be saving on gas. At the three-year mark, you'll start at about $585 a year on average. Some hybrids, such as Lexus NX, bring savings on day one. And the higher price is a better deal. The better price, the lowdown, the Lexus UX is a luxe and efficient, but the RAV4 hybrid is a smarter choice. It gets the same 37 miles per gallon, but has more space for less money. For more pampering, go with the RAV4 hybrid XLE Premium. It still costs less than the Lexus UX. And a couple of quotable quotes, and then we'll close out. Bach, Beethoven, Bo Diddley, it's all the same 12 notes. That's all we have. And it's up to each of us to create our own unique sound. From Quincy Jones. I dreamed of becoming a border guard, then a translator, and then a diplomat. Volodymyr Zelensky, who happens to be the head of Ukraine. We need to start from inclusion. As things arise, I have confidence we can figure it out. But we can't start at the opposite. Megan Rapinoe, a soccer player. I don't define myself by my job. I'm not just a doctor. I'm not just a comedian. I'm not just an annoying overactor. I persisted in annoying the world for decades, and the world relented. I'm just me. Ken Jeong, actor. My version of our mana system means that we are the toughest tribe of people, despite what the world says. Balu Babola, offer. And a quick joke. Rim shots. Doctor get together to study the effects of alcohol on the way a person walks, and the results were staggering. I got over my addiction to chocolate, marshmallows, and nuts. I won't lie, it was a rocky road. And with that, we've run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5000.